Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Parents are desperate for advice when their children struggle socially. Every parent wants their child to be okay, to have friends, to be successful, and to be comfortable in their own skin. But many children lack the important social and executive functioning skills that allow them to navigate with ease. Parenting coach Caroline McGuire provides a blueprint to help kids develop the executive functioning skills they need. Why Will No One Play With Me? Author and parenting coach Caroline McGuire, welcome to 411 Teen.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming. What is the significance of the title?
Years ago, when I first started working with kids, I had a little boy who asked me why no one would play with him. And it sort of struck me, this question, because it really came to me that kids don't really care about academics and the other things that adults care about. What is affecting their lives is whether they have friends, whether they fit in, and social. And so when I was looking for a title for the book, I just kept thinking about that little boy, because he's really one of the reasons I started this journey.
Okay, so that was the impetus for the book even, huh?
It was. I mean, I had started working with families, and I had very quickly realized that nowadays, because we're a playdate culture, if your kid is a little more challenging, you don't get asked back on a playdate. And so the kids I was working with, they didn't have playdates, and therefore they were isolated really young. And then the little boy asked me the question, and I just really started realizing that parents need a guide to help them help their child that's jargon-free and really gives them a roadmap.
Well, I read your book, and I really want to applaud you because I like the organization of it, the way it was written, the way how you start out with a narrative and then you have activities or examples, and it is very reader-friendly.
Well, thank you so much. That's been the goal. I really feel like you shouldn't have to have a PhD to help your kid. And really a lot of parents are trying to manage these things themselves. There either is no professional, they can't afford one, or even if you have professional help, you know, you need to know this stuff because you are there day in, day out. So I thank you so much. I appreciate the compliment.
What distinguishes your book from other similar books maybe addressing the topic from your perspective?
I think most parenting books, and I can say this because I'm a mom of two kids, they talk about a problem and they give you research, but they don't, and they use, you know, vignettes and little stories, but they don't give you step by step, what do? What do you pay attention to? You know, I have all these scripts and all of these, you know, step by step, and what if my kid does a disappearing act kind of boxes and workbook activities, and it's meant to answer the questions parents have of how do you do this? While No Play With Me is meant to be all about the how rather than just what's the problem, because as a parent I know what the problem is, but I don't really know what to do.
Well, even though I know the focus may be parents, I think that it could be helpful to almost anyone. You might have to make some application there, but to anyone who's dealing with kids who may be a little challenging.
I agree. I've been working with Lesley University, where I got my master's, and other universities have come to me to give this to teachers. I work with schools all the time. I mean, there is absolutely a need for folks other than parents to have this information. But I think because Why Will No One Play With Me is so jargon-free, it means that anybody can pick it up. You don't have to have, you know, a PhD or a master's degree in this particular area. And that was my goal.
Tell us, Caroline, who are the children that you are talking about? Who are these children that are having a hard time understanding social cues? That's part of it, and managing their behavior.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I always say to folks, think about the uncle you know who you kind of avoid at Thanksgiving. Think about the person in your office who just can't work collaboratively with people. That's these kids. They're just grown up. The kids are any kid. It can be a kid with a diagnosis like ADHD or a shy kid. I've had many people come to me whose child is introverted and, you know, they've had a hard time and now things get worse. If you've moved a lot, if your kid is just kind of awkward, you know, maybe they're super anxious and they're just awkward because of their lack of self-confidence. I see that a lot. Then that this, you know, this is for you. It doesn't have to be such a bad problem that your child is left out every minute. You know, we know that 70% of people who do not succeed in the workplace, it is because of emotional intelligence. So we want to give this gift of life skills to any kid who is struggling, even a bit, because we all can be working on something.
So what we're really saying is that this book is to help children, and adults overcome some of the social challenges in their life.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I use these methods with adults and the exercises. I just don't use the cute visuals, and I don't use some of, you know, I change the language. But I have had clients who are 60. I have clients who are 25, 30. You know, this can help anyone. But I'm going to start the world of change with kids, and then I'll work from there.
Well, you know, if you start early, then maybe you won't be that adult that is a little off to the left or the side or whatever the case may be.
Absolutely. I mean, that would be my that's what I'd implore parents about, is that we know that the brain is the most flexible when a child is young. It does not mean, I am saying, that if they are a teenager, you cannot change things, because you absolutely can. But it's harder, and they have more habits. Parents say to me, oh, I'm going to wait till after the holidays. Don't. The holidays are social. It does not have to be, you know, this thing that you live through. It can be an opportunity, and you can play games with your child. You go into a holiday, and you have them look at who's showing different moods by their body language and their facial expression. I mean, you can do tons of things so that your child starts learning, and you don't have to wait.
Share with us, and what we're talking about is executive functioning. Share with us the framework for just understanding, you know, what executive functioning is.
Sure. So executive functioning is all of the processes in the brain that manage everything, such as attention, organization, emotional regulation, self-regulation, planning, prioritizing. It's all those things. So when you are talking about academic skills or social skills, the executive function in the prefrontal lobe, the front part of the brain, that is what controls all of this and helps with this. And, you know, you may have a kid who is just brilliant in one area, but they have weakness in executive function in another area. So there's no one size fits all. Just because your kid is disorganized and, you know, disheveled and doesn't necessarily read social cues, they could also have a skill that is just off the charts brilliant. And what we want to do is help them so they can have choices and they can get those jobs that they want to go for someday. And they can, you know, not look back and say, oh, I didn't have any friends until, you know, I was a grown up. We want to make sure that they have that opportunity now.
Why are they experiencing these challenges? How would you assess what's going on?
Well, there's a few things. Mm-hmm. One, we know children are playing less. They're on electronics more, and they are given less opportunities to also work things out, you know, and you have a little squabble with your next door neighbor and then you figure it out. You know, we don't play like we used to play. Kids have much more little free time and they're much more supervised by adults, and adults tend to work things out for them. So they're not developing those skills, right? We're
right.
there and
oh,
therefore
yeah.
we jump in.
You're right.
But then the other thing is,
hey, excuse me, these helicopter moms and the tractor dads.
Yeah, no, and the snowplow and all those different
terms. That's right. I had to add that. Go right ahead.
No. Go ahead. That's absolutely true. But I also think, like, there's so many activities. Kids
mm-hmm.
have so much structure. We know that schools are asking for more homework than they did 30 years ago. So kids have homework. And then the other thing, though, is we've always had folks like this, right?
Yeah.
There's always been that person that just doesn't read the room, doesn't get it, isn't really self-aware, talks too much, lets the joke go on too long. And it all goes back to this executive function system in the brain where, you know, these folks just don't naturally come to these skills, so we have to teach them through direct instruction. And the good news is we know so much more now. I have many grandmothers come to my talks and say, my child, my daughter, whoever had this problem,
mm-hmm.
and I never could get them help. And now, you know, it's inheritable. My grandchild has it. So I'm here to buy this book and get them help because, you know, I've watched it affect their lives. I mean, we just know much more now about the brain than we did 40 years ago.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm talking with author and parenting coach Caroline McGuire. We're going to take a break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I have been talking with Caroline McGuire, a personal coach who works with children who struggle with executive function weaknesses and the families who support them. Caroline talks with 411 Teen this hour. Caroline, you state that every child has a story, and we tell ourselves little lies that keep us from moving forward. How does one find the story?
I think when you as a parent are talking to kids who struggle in this area or other areas, they tend to develop this sort of self-defense mechanism,
mm-hmm.
which is this story. And the story can be smart kids don't have friends. I'm going to have friends when, you know, I go to college. It's all in your head. This is my favorite. You're so old and decrepit, Caroline, that you don't understand that everyone has virtual friends now, which is statistically not true, by the way. And so when you as a parent are trying to move a child forward socially, one of the big blockers is, do they buy in? Do they believe there's a problem? And this story is essential to their moving forward. Because think about it, if you don't think, you know, you need to get to the gym, or you don't think you need to eat healthier, you don't, because
right.
you're not motivated.
Right. That's true.
So how they uncover the story is by using open-ended questions, which I talk about in mm-hmm. Why Will No One Play With Me, and these are not meant to interrogate, but rather to sort of ask about it. You know, tell me more about that. What do you mean, children? won't have friends till college. And you're using these open-ended questions with, like, what, who, how, to find out what's the story behind the story, and you're coming from curiosity. You know, aren't you curious why someone thinks they will have friends magically in college when they don't have friends until college? Like, I want to know. So you're doing that, and then I know parents out there are saying, well, some people are thinking, my kid doesn't talk to me. I have many, many, many methods in the book for that, but I want to just say a couple, if
it's
okay.
Yes, please do.
One is give them options. You know, some kids just can't think on the spot of what it is. So if you say, well, is it because this is hard for you, or is it because you just don't care? You know, you give them options, and then sometimes they start to argue with you. No, it's not that at all, you know? And then that's great. I love it when they argue with me because it means they're talking. The other thing is, if they're little, you can draw a picture. You can show them a picture. And the other thing is, you know, I have actually now on my website, CarolineMaguireAuthor.com, videos of how these conversations look and feel. And I have one where, you know, a teenage boy definitely is not happy to talk to me and does not like me. And I did that because I want parents to see that, like, I get it. And many kids are like, I don't like you seeing you. But the thing about it is that when kids are really reluctant, let's not make this a four-hour conversation.
Right.
Let's have it be light. You know, you try to see what you can talk to them about, and then maybe do it in the car so they don't have to look at you, and then walk away. Don't keep pushing and pushing and pushing. With a kid who doesn't like to talk, we might get just a tad of information, and then tomorrow we come back for more. So that's just a snippet of what I offer in While No One Plays With Me, but I wanted to say that because I know so many parents are probably driving thinking, but my kid doesn't talk to me.
Right. And you were reading my mind because I was going to ask you, you know, any suggestions you may offer to aid in helping parents get that child to feel free to open up. You know, they don't feel like talking. Why don't they feel like talking? They just don't want to.
I have one, which is, you know, a lot of times when kids have struggled, we as parents, and this is not judgment, but we fall into a pattern, and there are sort of like flashpoints and hot buttons, and, you know, I don't want to talk about virtual anymore. So if your kid doesn't want to talk about virtual friends anymore, for instance, one good way to get them talking is ask them, like, what are four things you never want me to say again? And usually it's something you're doing that kind of, you know, it makes them triggered. So that's one way. And then also, you know, maybe you let virtual friends or something go for a while, because the more you can get them to open up and have a collaborative relationship with you, the more then you can go back to those hot topics. But if everything is shut down and you keep going back to the well, you're probably not going to get very far. This isn't me saying ignore it. This is me saying, like, friendship is about myriad things. So I'm sure there's other things you guys could talk about, and, like, let some of these hot button topics, you know, sit for a little bit until things are better between you and your child about this hard topic.
Well, you identify five words. They would if they could. What is the significance of this message?
You know, what I found over the years is that parents are always so worried about kids being manipulative. And I get it. I get it. But I think with these kids, you know, if they could do this, they would do it. Everyone wants to make parents and teachers and coaches happy. And if parents sort of let go of the is it can't versus won't, and move into the space of, I think they just can't do it, then you are able so much more to help your child. And yeah, I understand it is a worry that, you know, kids are just sort of being willful. But my experience is kids don't act that way. They are not willful. They want to do well. but they just sometimes they can't do it. And it might seem simple to you because it's easy for you, but it's not easy for them.
What about that parent who says, that's just the way they are, but they'll grow out of it. And I've heard that so often, and they don't.
Oh, I've heard this so often. I am giving talks all over the country, all over the world, and I hear it at least once a day. Here's the thing. It's a big risk that they'll grow out of it because statistically and research-wise, they don't. It is brain-based, so likely they won't. And honestly, it's actually a big risk to take because we all know those folks who It affects everything about their lives. You know, I was on a cruise ship last year, and I was talking to a gentleman just, you know, sitting in the lounge chairs, and he said to me, well, I can't get a new job. I don't like my job, but I have learned my boss, and I don't have great social skills. And he knew what I was, you know, about to publish a book, and he said, and I can't switch jobs. Mm-hmm. That's so sad to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want these kids to end up with those things, and I get that we don't want to change who they are.
Right.
Here's the thing. You're making them able to have more choices. Their core is going to stay the same. If their core is a love of, you know, Legos and robots and whatever, that's not going to change. But what will happen is they'll have more people to play robots with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, Caroline, how do kids learn new ways to connect with other kids and make friends? How do we teach them that? How do we teach them what to do or what to say or what not to say, you know, whatever the case may be, so that they can connect and make friends?
So it starts with that story piece, and then it goes into, in Why Will No One Play With Me, I think it's 150 social skills lessons. And parents will fill out a questionnaire, and they'll figure out what is it that are the top three issues they need to work on first, and that will guide them. And then let's say it is joining in, mixing in. The lessons the parent and child will do will allow your child to learn those skills. You know, I had a girl I worked with who was super shy, and she wanted friends so desperately, but she felt invisible, and it was so hard for her to make chit-chat and go into the cafeteria and, like, talk to other kids. And so these lessons are meant to, you know, help your child get more confident, help them understand the social world so they get that, like, you've got to go to people. They're not going to come to you. And then also figure out, you know, how do you make that chit-chat? And then you're going to be guided to help that child go into the cafeteria, and maybe the first time they just sit and they don't talk to anybody, and that's okay. And then the next time they are able to talk. And so the whole book is meant to help children make those, you know, practices and go off into the real world and do these things, because that's what I've done over the years. I know that kids, you know, don't just jump on board and say, yay, I'll do this. This is great, Mom.
Right. That's true. We touched on it previously, but let's look at the role of unstructured play. What role does unstructured play hold in child development? We know that play is very important. It's the most natural environment for just about any learning that occurs. Although it seems like play and the arts are one of the first components of a daily schedule, school schedule, to be eliminated.
They are, unfortunately, and I think part of it is that they are the soft skills, right? And so people forget how important they are. Yes, play is so essential. If you think about it, play is how children learn.
Yeah.
And so when children play, they may seem like they're just playing with dinosaurs, or they're just, you know, running around and playing tag, but they learn from that, and they're able to, you know, when it's unstructured, when adults are not hovering and telling them everything they need to do, what happens is children start to negotiate with each other, they learn, you know, that joke went on too long, and other kids give them feedback and say, hey, stop it. That's bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the kids we're talking about, I just want to say this, they are, even if they're playing, they're not learning those lessons. And that's why you're going to do that one-on-one coaching with them, because unfortunately, you know, when the kid says to them, please stop it, it just doesn't sink in with certain kids with low self-awareness.
Right. Well, one thing I wanted to note about play is that they're losing, when they don't play, they lose their opportunity to kind of be free and to improvise and to experiment when they don't have that option of play in their life. What impact does that have on a child from your perspective? Because it seems like they would be losing that component of just kind of unstructured, natural kind of play, where they learn to improvise and try things out.
Yeah, I mean, when children are either, you know, denied play dates and don't have anyone to play with, or when we have them so structured that all they do mm-hmm. is, you know, move from one lesson to another
right.
or go from school to home, they really lose out on a lot of opportunities that they need in order to learn these skills. It's actually, you know, if you think about it, it's every time you skin your knee, you learn something. So these play opportunities are really no joke. They're something that kids need. And unfortunately, I don't know why, but people are taking, we have less recess now.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
we have less opportunities for play. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, it is creating generations of kids who don't have the social skills they need.
Well, to my listening audience, this is Dr. Liz Hollifield, and I am talking with coach, author, Caroline McGuire. She has written a new book, Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. Caroline, where can one acquire the book? Is it online? Is it audio? Tell the listening audience what's happening.
It is online, it is audio, it is all these things. It is at my website, CarolineMaguireAuthor.com, and that's M-A-G-U-I-R-E. It's also, if you just Google Why Will No One Play With Me, it comes up. It's on Amazon, and it's audio, it's Kindle, it's hardback, it's all of the above.
All of the above. All right. That's great. You got all options covered, huh?
I do. I try.
Okay. We talk about coaching, and coaching is important and it's involved. But what is coaching? What does it include?
So coaching is this idea. If you think about it, you know, the coach for swim or football doesn't jump in and actually, like, play football even when the football player is not doing what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of coaching is that you're a guide. You use open-ended questions and you ask children about things. And you also reflect what they've said. And by doing that, kids become so much more aware of what's going on for them. And they kind of witness what it is that they've said. So, like with the story example, a lot of times I'll just ask them a question. And then they start to realize, well, that doesn't sound right. And
mm-hmm.
then they start to argue with me. But the idea here is that you are truly guiding them along, and you're doing it by using these open-ended questions. And, you know, similar to life coaching, it's this opportunity not to be the person who jumps in the pool and swims that race for them, but to be that shepherd who guides them and builds these skills, just like a coach, you know, in sports,
mm-hmm.
except, you know, adding that communication element.
Well, I'm glad you said communication, because as I think of your book, communication is a major component of coaching, correct?
It is, because when we have kids who are struggling like this, they need to be able to open up and talk about really hard things. So the coaching technique is just a gift for parents, because then you have it to talk about all this hard stuff.
And communication, I think, is something that often folks misunderstand, because communication is not just talking, and I wanted you to address that component of it. Talk is important, but it's also listening. It's also observing. All of that is involved in effective communication. Would you agree, or what? Where do you sit on that?
Oh, I would absolutely agree. One of the things that While No One Play With Me teaches you is how to listen to your child more effectively and tell them less. It teaches you how to, read body language for your child, and then also how to teach your child to read body language, because we know that communication happens on all different levels, and body language is a huge piece of it, and also our tone. You know, what tone are we using about these issues, and how can we, you know, maybe look at that and change it up?
You are very correct. We're moving up into time for break, but I wanted to ask about your Play Better plan. Parents need to be aware of what it is and what it involves. I am talking with Caroline McGuire, author of Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return and I'll continue my conversation with Caroline McGuire.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
This is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and I'm talking by phone to Caroline McGuire, author of Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. Caroline, what is the Play Better Plan?
The Play Better Plan is just my name for this coaching program where you learn how to talk with your child, learn how to pinpoint what skills they need to work on, and then you as a parent sit down with them and teach them these skills. And also, you know, have this reference so that if you, you know, come across something, you can pull it out and say, okay, what do I do about, you know, this particular situation? What do I do when my kid won't, you know, talk to other kids? So that's the name of it. And it's a program. It's a guide. It's step-by-step yellow brick road to lead you toward how you improve these skills.
One of the skills that you had identified is self-awareness, recognizing that this is a process and not just a one-shot deal. How does one help their child become self-aware?
So self-awareness is a multifaceted aspect, right? And one of the ways that a parent helps their child become self-aware is through the open-ended questions that you're going to be using. Okay. Because when you use open-ended questions, it's almost like, you know, the person says it aloud, and then they are actually hearing themselves, and they kind of float above their body, and they are able to witness, what is it that I'm saying about social? What is it that I'm, you know, looking at? And they're able to take more of a 360-degree look at things. The other aspect of it is that you are going to do exercises like with Social Spy, where kids, you know, just very subtly learn to covertly go to school, go to a mall, and watch other people. And they're given a specific mission. So let's say your child says to you, I want to talk to other people, but I don't know what to talk about. You would ask them to go to school and, you know, we rehearse watching without watching and spy on other kids. What are they talking about? It also works, like, let's say your kid says, there's no problem. No one joins anything. You know, you just don't know. You say, okay, I want you to go to school, and I want, you know, there's a big event going on. I mm-hmm. want you to listen and report back who is going to the event. And is everyone, you know, is everyone opting out of it? And so you're helping to build their self-awareness by exposing them to what's really going on and then helping them to reflect on it. That's just, you know, one of many ways in Why Will No One Play With Me, in addition to exercises that literally help them build their self-awareness. That's just like the sort of big picture way.
How do you guard, I guess, against or cope with the child who is resistant?
You know, a lot of children are resistant because mm-hmm. this is hard.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
So I want to say that, you know, I don't think kids are difficult or resistant. I think it's hard. So one of the things that I have is, Why Will No One Play With Me has like two whole chapters on resistance and troubleshooting. But one of the things that happens is that kids need to see us as a model. And this is out of their comfort zone. And one of the things they need to become more aware of is, anything that you want to do that is worth doing, you have to exit your comfort zone, right?
Right.
So one of the things you can do as a parent is to, A, make sure you're getting help and you're talking about getting help. And that helps pave the way. Because if you are a person who will sit there with the, you know, the Apple program guide and never go to Apple Care and never get any help, mm-hmm. that's sending a very specific message to your kid. Stump, you know, fight it through. Don't call the 800 number. So you want to make sure you're doing that. And then second, are you exiting your comfort zone? A lot of my success with really resistant kids has come where we make sort of a bargain
right.
and I exit my comfort zone.
How do you deal with that parent that once they hear something, they misinterpret what they hear or they misinterpret what they see because they're that child?
Right. They themselves have low self-awareness mm-hmm. and they themselves mm-hmm. struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I would say is that many, I've had parents also raise their hand and say, I want to do this because I know my kid needs this, but I have to tell you, I don't have great social skills, so I'm
right.
not sure I'm the
right.
best teacher. So a few things. If you don't feel you're the best teacher and your spouse is, that's an option. But if you do this book and this journey with your child, I have seen it hundreds of times, your skills will improve because you're also paying attention and focusing on this. So I think there's two things. One, yes, put the oxygen mask on first and try to work on this and also try to use the lessons in the book for yourself and go through it with your child. Two, one of the big things that Why Will No One Play With Me asks you to do is to not overreact, because you're mm-hmm. going to hear a lot of things you do not want to hear. And the more that you react to the fact that your kid confesses, I haven't been in the lunchroom in a year and a half, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, if you overreact to that, you're not getting more information. So I know it's so hard, but, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to teach you in the book is how to kind of, you know, keep your temper in check. And if you know that this is a flashpoint for you because you suffered socially yourself, you know, some of the exercises are for parents so that they can learn to react less. And it's hard. I am not saying it's not hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk some about play dates. Just generally, how does one orchestrate an effective play date? I mean, how does one select? What are the integral components of it? I believe you had seven steps to plan a successful play date for a kid who's struggling socially. Do you mind sharing those and talking about play dates in these last 10 minutes that we have?
Not at all. That's great. You know, play dates are what we do nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times play dates sort of continue through middle school. So it is an essential piece. And for these kids, a lot of times they've had just disastrous play dates. You know, parents say to me, I can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But they need practice. So part of this is to look at things like the environment and setting. you know, where are you having it and when? So if you have a play date at the end of a long day when a kid is hungry, tired, and they've run out of steam, it's not going to be as successful. So when can you have it and how long can it be? Can it be of shorter duration? I'm telling you to let kids play on their own and coach from the sidelines. But, you know, I get it. Parents want to drop off. So you might need to have more than a 45-minute play date. But what you can do is 45 minutes is, you know, them playing alone. And then you do a craft or cooking or something with them. And you do become the shepherd. And this isn't about you interfering or being a snowplow parent. This is about, you know, I wish I could get a play date that was less than 2 hours because my kid falls apart at X marker, but I can't. The other thing is playmate temperament. And I'm going to come to, you know, how do you get playmates when you haven't had any? But,
right.
You know, if you have two really rambunctious kids, how is your child going to practice self-regulation when they're with another kid who has no self-regulation? So you want to look at temperament. Who are they playing with? You know, nutrition. Are they eating? Are they hungry? Are they tired? And then the structure, right? We can't have it necessarily be in an overstimulating bounce park if they can't perform under those conditions. If you have struggled in the past and you have not had friends to play with, cousins, family, friends, people you can confide in and you can say, hey, I'm doing this. This is what we're doing. And they can be supportive of you. Also, you know, one thing parents often do is say, well, we're going to move schools. We're going to move.
Yes.
You know,
oh, I'm so glad you touched on that. Yes,
but
they do.
But if they don't have the skills, then you moving schools is not going to change anything. So I'm here to ask you to work on the skills, even if it has to be with younger kids or kids from a different town. But don't just switch their school, switch their camp. I mean, it sounds like you're in agreement with that.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not in agreement with them moving. I'm agreement with what you're saying, that moving does not help, that the issues are still there, the problems are still there, the challenges remain. So it may be better to stay where you are and try to
work
it. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No.
And there is in the book and Why Will No One Play With Me, there's a public relations campaign, and kids can work on when they have acquired new skills and they want people to treat them differently, a public relations campaign where they try to change the way that people feel about them. And I've seen it work. But, you know, you have to change the skills. Otherwise, it doesn't change the way things are. And then the other aspect I want to mention about the playdate planning is we're going to give your child a mission, right? We're going to ask them to work on one or two things. Now, that may mean that those two things go better and other things do not. And I totally get that this can be hard to watch. But what happens is those two things go better and we focus on that. Because you can't change everything about yourself at once.
True. Good points. All good points. I'm talking with Caroline McGuire, author and coach. And Caroline, share where we can acquire your book, Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive.
You can go to Amazon and type in Why Will No One Play With Me. You can also go to CarolineMcGuireAuthor.com, and I am there with books on my website and where you can buy it.
Okay. You said the better way to look at resistance is just to look at it as if it's just something that the kids are feeling like it's too hard. I just can't do this. At what point does one seek professional intervention? At what point, when the child is saying, I can't do it, it's too hard, yet, and they continue to struggle, and you see them struggling, and it seems like your interventions, your meaning the parent, interventions are not being effective, when do they need to seek outside help? What
well,
are the
I
signs?
Would say that if you feel that your interventions are not being effective or you feel like they could benefit from a social skills group, by mm-hmm. all means, go. Mm-hmm. You know, I am all for professionals. Here's the issue. A lot of kids would rather die. They will
uh-huh.
not go.
That's true.
So, and if you go to a professional and if you feel that your child is persistently left out or they cannot perform these skills we're talking about and you can get them to a professional, that's awesome. The problem is that most professionals, a lot of them have a waiting list, and a lot of times you meet, they go to a group or something, and then the rest of the week, you're there. So I would encourage parents that if they feel like things are really bad, if there's depression, if the anxiety is so bad, please do seek professional help. And this is covered in Why Don't Play With Me. But you still need to know how to reinforce this.
Indeed,
and you
exactly.
still need to be teaching them on the off times, or it won't stick.
How long would you, and I know every child is different. I mean, and there's no cookbook about exactly what to do. But at what point, how long, if they have been working with this religiously and they just feel like they're not making any, at what point, how far should they go? I mean, should you see some change after a month, 2 months, 6 months? Is there any kind of time frame they can look at?
Yes. My experience has been that you are going to see changes within weeks.
Okay.
Now, they are not going to be that today they were a caterpillar and tomorrow they are a butterfly, right? But you're going to see a change in awareness, a change in confidence, a change in the way that they look at things. Some kids progress more quickly, and you will, within weeks, have them recognizing. I have this tool called the Bridge to Betterment in Why Will No One Play With Me, and also a tool called How Will You Know? And the Bridge to Betterment just lays out what are the steps of change. And the How Will You Know is actually kind of cool. It is what you will hear and what you will see in terms of your child, and they're making progress, but it's subtle. So it's literally quotes from kids I've worked with where they say something like, you know, I don't really listen to other kids. That's progress.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see those kind of changes mm-hmm. because they may not shift their behavior, but that's huge. To be aware mm-hmm. is huge.
Well, what about the parent in these last 2 minutes? How do we keep the parent from giving up? You know, sometimes parents just feel like overwhelmed. Any suggestions for them?
I absolutely have a couple suggestions. One, even if you're overwhelmed right now, or, you know, you come to one of my talks and you're overwhelmed, please buy the book so in your dark hour, you can come down in the middle of the night and you can read it and you can feel better. That's actually a tip I got from a parent this weekend, said to me, tell people this. The second thing is, when you're overwhelmed, I want you to write down all the things that have changed and gotten better and all the successes you've had, and do some self-care, because this is raising a kid who is struggling. It's hard, and you often feel alone. So please also find a friend who you can talk to. Find someone who supports you, who gets it, because that is going to make you feel far less overwhelmed.
What role, if any, do you find culture plays in all of this?
This is a question I get a lot. I think that for every group and culture, there are social norms.
Mm-hmm.
And so this isn't here to inflict or tell one way of being on any group. But if your child is not able to keep with the social norms of their culture, or they are not able to get along with people, then that is something they need to work on, because every culture has different norms. But within those norms, people have ways that they are expected to behave and not.
That is an excellent answer. So when they are out of step with their culture, that's when there's an issue.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
You know, especially if it's alienating people,
okay.
or they feel invisible, or they're not able to connect. We know that connection is essential to mental and physical health.
That's it for this hour. To my listening audience, much appreciation for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.